Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to the How We Scaled show. My name is Jeff Brandeis, president and founder of CEO of Brandeis Coaching and Brandeis Training Solutions. Each of our episodes will feature a CEO, VP of sales, or an entrepreneur that has scaled their business to six, seven, even eight figures. And on the show, we will ask questions to them about what they did that scaled their business, that grew their revenues, that made them what they are today. So you're ready to listen and learn? Stay tuned. One, two, and three. Here we go. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the How We Scaled podcast. This is Jeff Brandeis, and I'm so excited to introduce you to our guest today. His name is Chris Carr. He is the SEO expert at Farotech. So SEO, marketing, you know, we're all in that game right now, Chris. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your company. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I started Farotech almost 21 years ago, 20 years ago.
Wow.
I was 21 years old. We started out mostly in web development and then scaled from SEO to SEO and then scaled from SEO to inbound and digital marketing. We specialize in something called CRO, which is conversion rate optimization. And what we strive to do is to help companies build systems rather than just basically put all their eggs in one basket on one form of marketing or another, because I've got some stories to tell you about why that doesn't always work out and the price that you can pay when you kind of get it wrong.
Well, you know, I think when it comes to marketing, you know, it's always one of those things that, you know, when we talk to entrepreneurs, especially our listeners are relatively new entrepreneurs that just starting getting into business. And one of the first things they always go, hey, Jeff, I need more leads. I need more. I need to make more sales. I need more opportunity. And I think really what we're going to talk about is really something of interest, no matter what size organization or company you're with. So why don't we get into that right now and kind of help us understand a little bit more about what that CRO was that you just talked about and some of the pitfalls that we all encounter, for lack of a better phrase, unless we're using your service.
That sounds great. Yeah.
So when you look at traditional marketing, Chris, mm-hmm. how do you differentiate, you know, your sales versus, you know, we got the LinkedIn contacts, we got the people who are doing paid ads, we got the, you know, YouTube guys going out there as well now. And So now I'm talking to Chris and I want to learn more about what you do that's different than the other folks.
Well, let me kind of tell you about a little bit of a problem that I've experienced over the last 20 years is that we have a lot of companies that I would say is they're building their house on sand. What I mean by that is that so much of the technologies that we use on an everyday basis, we don't own. We strive to win on Google, but Google's one algorithm change away from basically ruining everything. I remember the days where Facebook would give you an organic reach of 40 to 60%, which means if you build a huge audience, you publish something, almost everything you pushed out there, your audience would see. Now it's down to maybe 1 or 2% unless you're willing to pay. And you think, oh, you know what? Those days are over. And then guess what? Apple does a privacy thing and half your retargeting ads all go away. And so literally what can happen here is you can wake up one day and everything you built your foundation on, it can be gone, because essentially you don't control these platforms. So if what you can do, what the alternative is to say, hey, you know what? I want to build a system to have all of the critical features of marketing, basically the critical platforms of marketing, all working in unison together, so that if one goes down, I can pivot and focus on the other ones and I don't take such a colossal hit. And, you know, so that's what we've sort of done, is just that we help our clients establish really strong arguments and we help them with their branding and their messaging. Then we go into lead generation through SEO, paid advertising, social media. We put it all through HubSpot and essentially through that inbound methodology. People come to your website, they engage. I'm literally tracking every movement that they do, scoring every engagement that they do, so that at any time your sales team knows every lead that's in your pipeline, whether they're cold, warm, or hot. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to nurture them, and I'm going to stay in front of them with ads and advertising and retargeting and all that stuff like that. But when all those things are working together, they ultimately come down to one thing, and that's analytics. Right. And the analytics that we help our clients do is to make data-driven decisions about what to do next. So what we do that's very few companies do, in your first 10 weeks, we develop a gap assessment. A gap assessment is literally this big. It's a 3 to 5 year roadmap on how to 5X or 10X your business, how to scale effectively. And essentially what we do is that we measure everything. We turn over every rock. We look at your entire industry. And so our decisions are based upon data, not off of some crackerjack marketing guy who read a blog and says, hey, you know what? You should be on Snapchat.
Right. And when we talk about data, I love that. It's, you know, typically when I get into meetings or I talk to other owners, the only data that they have is sales data. Okay. Yeah. Right. You can tell me if I'm wrong here, but you know, if I get into a management meeting, sales comes in, they tell me how many calls they had, what the close ratios were. And, you know, the marketing guy go, yeah, I launched this marketing campaign on Facebook, or I did this. And yeah, I think I had, we reached, you know, 10,000 people, blah, blah, blah. But how many of those actually, yeah, you know, was the target audience, what they, did they convert at the end of the day?
And then I'll have situations where people say, well, if you guys are as good as you are, why don't you guarantee what you do? And I say, okay, what's your cost per acquisition? How much does it cost you to get a new client? And have you ever optimized that? One, you don't know the cost of what it takes to get a client.
Right.
And then two, if you show me the A-B testing that you've done to try to optimize it to make it leaner, what results did you get? And usually you find out very quickly, you don't know what it cost you to get a client, but you want me to work for free. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, I would be happy to put my money where my mouth is, but you can't come to me with an empty box and say, hey, you know, fill it. You know, you got to have a starting point. And that's where we're going to work together to get you those numbers.
Right.
Like every CEO has to know their EBITDA, but for some reason, every marketing and sales team doesn't not have to know their cost per acquisition. You're like,
yeah, well,
you do.
Gotcha. So you mentioned in our opening, you were 21 when you started this company. What made you get into doing this at the young age of 21?
Honestly, it's not even a good story. I was dating a girl and thought the way to win her heart back was to build her a website so she can put her artwork up.
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty old in the aspect of from the in the internet age, I'm pretty old, meaning, you know, to build a website for your girlfriend in 1999 was a hard thing to do. You know what I mean? Sure. Like you had to know code. You had to, you know what I mean?
Right.
Within 6 months of trying to hire people and it not working out, I said, you know what, the hell, I'll do it myself. Never got the girl back. It was 6 months later anyway. I didn't even remember.
Happy ending here, huh?
Exactly. And then she still won though, because you know, I have payroll every 2 weeks that gives me kidney stones. You know what I mean? Meaning, you know, it's like you might think, oh, wow, it's amazing. You built this company off for such a great experience. And I'm like, yeah, but every 2 weeks you have the pleasure and pressure of owning your own shop. You know,
you kind of typify what I'll call, no offense to our listeners here, sometimes you're starting your business, you're a sole entrepreneur. You got challenges, you got things you got to fight through. And really at the end of the day, it all comes down to your own dedication and your desire to win, which, you know, obviously you didn't win the girl, but you won the business.
Well, I tell this joke every time. We doubled our income every year for the first 3 years, which is pretty amazing, but that just shows you how little income I made for the first 3 years. You know, it's like ramen noodles in year one, two bags of ramen noodles in year two,
My real spaghetti and real three, right?
maybe you get to pay your parents back for the loan they gave you to stay alive.
Gotcha. Yeah. So when you do look at your scaling, you know, obviously my podcast here is how you scaled or how we scaled. If you look back the past few years, what have you done to really scale your company to where it is today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think some of the low hanging fruit is we hired really well. I found that just running a business, I wasn't good at a lot of, you can try to do self-improvement to a certain level. And then after a while, you know what, you have to kind of know, you have to do an assessment of where you're at and say, you know what, if I can't get there myself, who am I going to hire to fill these gaps? And at that time, around 2014, I got a business partner and we were able to divide and conquer so that I sit with clients and I do the dreaming and I help develop these campaigns and he runs the shop. He does all the operations. He does, you know, everything from billing to, you know, everything else like that. And so one thing that I would probably tell your listeners is that if you've been fighting the good fight and you feel like, you know what, I'm only going to improve by maybe 10 to 15% on my own self-improvement, maybe you should hire someone to fill in the gaps, because when it did for me, it catapulted the business. Other thing is technology. You know, technology in the marketing world, from where it was at when I started in 2001, or even where I was in 2013, leaps and bounds. It's like, literally, it's a rocket ship. And we've been able to embrace really great technologies. We fail quickly. And we mean that intentionally. Like we're always trying new things and trying to fail as quickly as possible and learn and things like that. So
some of the new technologies or platforms we've obviously hear about is like TikTok and things like that. Are, in your mind, is that something here to stay? Is that just a current fad, or what's your thoughts?
Well, let's go with TikTok. TikTok's here to stay, unfortunately. it really just depends on your target audience and what you're trying to accomplish. What I will say is that one of the biggest liabilities for the world in TikTok is one of the benefits that you can have as a marketer is the aspect of when the average person downloads TikTok on their phone, they have more access to more of your information and more apps than any other app on your phone. So what they're doing is they're learning more and more about you so that as their advertising platform increases, you should be able to get to your target audience better. Also, not many businesses are there yet. I mean, marketers ruin everything. So when you can get to a platform where no one else is at, you might feel like it's lonely or nobody's going to this to look for your products and services. But when done right, your competition is smaller.
True.
Yeah.
So as you look ahead over the next 6 months to 12 months, where do you see your business, the industry, and the technology going?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that you have to look at here is that we don't know what side of COVID we're going to end up on. We have no idea whether this Delta variant is going to do the same thing we've been doing for the last year and a half. And so I would have thought a month ago that people were going to be returning back to their businesses. But I have a feeling, leaning on whatever perspective you have here, that investing in marketing that reaches people in their home office is still going to be worth your time, energy, and money. I think they're going to be there. You know what I mean? And so I think that's going to be important to know. I think other things that you want to start to do is you want to start to consider how your own personal brand matters. I know it sounds weird, but your own LinkedIn, we were joking about LinkedIn a couple minutes ago, how you display yourself, whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or whether you're representing your company. It's weird, but we're in a new age of thought leadership and the technology platforms are benefiting those people who invest. What I mean by that is that one of the number one things Google wants you to do is establish yourself as a thought leader. Thought leaders communicate consistently. The content that they push out gets followers and likes and connections. And all of that stuff matters. So it matters to your company, but it also matters to yourself.
Sure. Yeah, how you KLT is kind of the little acronym, know, like, and trust, how your potential customers, you know, view you, how they, your, how we view each other is so important these days.
It's a very weird world that we're in. I don't think we've seen anything like it. You know what I mean? Like, just the fact that almost everyone has a megaphone now through social media. There's never been studies on what happens when you give the masses a megaphone and what happens, good, bad, or indifferent. I wouldn't say I like everything I've seen, but that's the world we live in, right?
Yeah, it's a beast. To a certain extent, we all don't love everything that's going on out there, but
yeah,
these things happen.
But I mean, my dad is nearly 80, and he was telling me about how he wanted to open up a TV repair shop. Right? This is, gosh.
Really?
Oh, okay. Not now. I'm saying when he was 21.
Right? Gotcha.
The distance and the capital and the faith that you'd have to hope that the people around you walk into your shop, compared to me, where I can service anybody in the world at a moment's notice and I can pay a couple bucks. People from California to wherever can see my information. Like, this is a wonderful time we're living in as an entrepreneur. Like, the speed from which you can go from zero to something with, you know, that's valuable is, it's never been done. You know what I mean? And so that's remarkable. You know what I mean? I'm assuming that what would you have done 40 years ago if the internet was in your pocket?
Right.
You know, right. Very different world, right?
It is very different. And I think people who are starting businesses today don't look at what they have as, you know, I'm a global business.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, 10 years ago, just like you were talking about, you know, your dad opened up a TV shop. I mean, he had his 20-mile radius maybe of prospects, right? Yeah. Maybe. But now you're on the internet.
Yep.
I mean, I spoke to someone the other day in London. You speak to someone in China. You're in Australia. Yep. It's, you know, we're all in this global economy right now, where there's nothing stopping you really from growing your business. You just got to be able to kind of go back to what you talked about earlier, align yourself with the right partners. And you know, the other aspect that I think is true is every entrepreneur knows or should know what they do really well. And they should really know what they don't do really well.
Yes.
And get someone to do that for them, right?
Correct. Correct. And, you know, I mean, I'm going to get my numbers wrong here, but prior to COVID, I think that even when you thought about things, you would think that all this commerce is done online. I think it was only 20% of all world commerce was done online.
Right.
Now, in COVID, I think we're up to almost 62%, something like that.
Wow.
Like all of your restaurants, think about all the transactions that they do through these delivery services and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We were forced to collect payment, to do things, to transact. We went from 20 to 60% in 6 months. It's crazy, right?
It is. That's mind-boggling.
I think one of the things that you have to look at with COVID is that, you know, Scott Galloway would talk about this, is that what we did in 6 months probably, you know, you're probably talking 20 years. We did 20 years in 6 months. Telemedicine.
Yep.
Within 90 days, every hospital
transformed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't have told every hospital, oh, by the way, you have to be entirely, you know what I mean? You have to be entirely virtual by this date. They would say that's moving heaven and earth. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know what's going to be on the other side. You know what I mean? Meaning, I think I was joking around, when you shake someone's hand now these days, it like feels foreign. You know what I mean? But, yeah.
I just had, you know, a friend of mine attended a conference last week in Vegas and just spoke to him, and he, you know, got diagnosed with COVID, because even though he had his vaccinations, it's like, you know, it's anyway, we're not over this by a long run. So when you talk to a customer or a prospect, Chris, and you hear them say this, it just gets you boiling that your competition is still saying some of this such outdated information. What would that be?
Yeah. Well, if I was just on the first page of Google, I would solve all my problems.
Give me that one more time. You broke out a little bit.
Oh, if I was just on the first page of Google, that's all I need to do. Or okay. If I had social media presence, that's all I need. And I'm like, what? Okay, got it. You're now on the first page of Google.
So what?
What are they going to see when they get there? You think your website's so star-spangled awesome that people are going to convert right out of the gate? You know that? Your social media presence. Okay, I got 1,000 followers. What are you going to say? 10,000 followers. What are you going to say? What's your message? Is it going to be consistent today as it is tomorrow? You have any graphic design? You have any collateral? Can you make an argument? Can you scale? Can you arm a team of salespeople? So like we all like oversimplify our problem because we don't use data to really figure out what is the size and the width and the height of these challenges. You know what I mean? Because we're so anxious to get in there. And we're not talking about just, oh, that mom and pop shop thinks that way. I'm talking about, I work with really large brands that do the same exact thing.
Yep.
You know, it's we know the data is out there, but to collect it and to understand it takes time and it takes energy and you got to know where to look. Yeah. And so we'll tell clients, you know what, like if you went to your primary doctor and he said, oh, guess what? You're going to be a good candidate for heart surgery. He'd be like, you're not going to take any tests. You're going to do anything. Right. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. But if you wanted to come to me and say, hey, Chris, here's my problems. You're in Florida. I'm in Philadelphia. Here's my marketing problems. I need more sales and I need this, this, and this. And I spend an hour with you and I say, okay, fine. Let me have access to your website. I spend another hour looking at that. And then I write you a proposal for $100,000. For some reason, you're like, well, he sounds like he's a pretty smart guy. Like, I don't do that. I don't do that. And all these marketing companies out there are willing to do that. They're willing to take your money after 2 hours of research.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of them expect you to make a decision in 45 minutes on.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, I've been on those calls too. So what do you think, Jeff? You ready to move forward with this?
Yeah.
Say, well, you know, hey, I mean, I just met you. Aren't you going to provide me a proposal? No. You know, just signed the electronic contract and let me have your credit card info, right? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just think that one of the things that I think the problem is that we've developed such an immediate gratification in our private life that we think from a business perspective that, you know, time is money. And I'm like, yeah, but you know what, if you don't measure it twice and you cut one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it matters.
It matters.
I feel slower, but I promise you, slow is fast when you think about having to do it all over again.
Yep.
And I'm probably your fourth marketing company.
More than likely. Yeah. So when you look at your ideal client or your avatar, what would that ideal company be that you're looking for?
So, I mean, I work with companies that our average retainer is between $8,000 and $10,000 a month. So usually clients that have $5 million plus of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I usually try to work with a company that might have one person in marketing already because they'll be a liaison to help us do what we do. But I also really try to find out companies that have a product or service where the potential clients come back to your website often to do their research and due diligence to find out whether you're really a thought leader, whether you're really real. We do really well with having you establish yourself and telling a really great story to be real. If it's a transactional business, I suffer with those because I like to tell stories and they're not going to pick a plumber based upon, you know what I mean? Yeah.
You're not going to go back to your heart surgery analogy. Yeah. You're not going to go hire that plumber to go do your heart surgery, are you?
That's right.
You know, you want someone specializes in the heart and knows the heart versus, how to go fix a leak or how to replumb your sink.
Yeah.
So one of the things I always like to understand, you know, and for our entrepreneurs as they grow into a leader, and you're a leader of your organization, your company, what do you like to focus in on? What do you like to do in order to keep the companies sailing ahead?
Yeah. I like to develop swim lanes. And one of the biggest problems I had was I would micromanage, and I would try to do the entire lifespan of the client relationship. So I would do the sales, I would sell the dream, I'd write the proposal, I would get the account manager, and I would babysit the account manager to make sure everything's all done, stuff like that. And you're spreading yourself way too thin. And my unique ability is seeing seeing the potential, outlining what it could be, developing a path to get there, but letting experts who are integrators integrate. You know what I mean? Like I'm not a great integrator, and I want to be, but I don't have to be for the company to grow. And so what we found out is that when we started to find really great people, figure out what their unique ability is, and try to get them doing their best work on their best day, really great things happen.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's something that I truly believe in at 110%. It also goes back to the earlier comment of do what you do well.
Yeah.
And let other people do things that, you know, that aren't as in your wheelhouse. But at the end of the day, if you were managing 100 clients, you wouldn't be able to go, you know, look at the big vision of the company, what's coming out next, and do that planning things. And I think that's also a great trap that a lot of our entrepreneurs, and I'm glad you brought it up, fall into. Because I want to do everything. I don't trust anybody.
Well, I think one of the other problems that you have, and I'm guilty of this too, is that we try to be all things to all people. What I mean by that is that you think, oh, it's a wider audience. Wider audience means more buyers. More buyers means more money. But what I've found is that the riches are in the niches. And what I mean by that is that if you can be hyper-focused on one specific area to reach one specific buyer persona or avatar or target, right? You don't need the whole ocean. You know what I mean? Like I am the best at catching this one type of fish, and there's a lot of those fish out there. But I don't need to catch sharks and whales. I just catch this one particular fish. I think it's your ocean background that's making me think of this analogy. You know what I mean? But so many people are like, no, I got to catch them all. I got to catch them all. I was like, you know what? When you try to catch them all, your message is so broad and nobody knows what you're doing. But you know what?
I love the phrase. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Like the chicken soup for the soul. We talk about this all the time, right? Like I would never read the chicken soup for the fireman's soul. I've never even seen a fire. You know what I mean? But I played soccer in high school and college. You give me chicken soup for the soccer player's soul. Even though I'd embarrass myself if I touched a ball right now, I'd still be very intrigued by the stories he's going to tell there. You know what I mean? So he knew how to get his right message to the right client at the right time. You know what I mean? And so many businesses try to be everything to all people all at once. And I'm like, unless you're Jeff Bezos, you got a big problem.
I love the phrase. And entrepreneurs, if you're figuring out what you want to do, who you want to market to, Chris, I'm going to go back to your phrase. The riches is in the niches. I got to get that one, say that one right. But you're right. You got to find that niche and differentiate yourself and focus in on that niche, that you become that expert. And I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you'll hopefully agree that if you master that niche, and then if you want to expand, the word will get out.
Yeah. I got to tell you this one stick. I mean, keep in mind, this was early internet, but there was this lady. I'm going to butcher the story, but the lesson is still there. This kid, he's like 25 years old, 30 years old. He gets let go from his job, but he gets severance. And so in his severance, he's in no rush to get a new job. His mother owns a knitting store, like yarn. She's old. She's like 70 something, right? And what he did was he just got his camera, a decent microphone. And every day his grandma just told one little knitting hack, but she did it every single day. And then 3 years, they're making $22 million a year.
Wow.
Because who knew there was all these little people out there wanting to know knitting hacks? I don't know what your knit your knitting thing is. But I promise you, the riches are in the niches. If you get very focused and then know your audience, I promise you the money will come.
You know, that's fantastic. So, Chris, I think it's a great way to kind of segue into this last bit was, yeah. So if our people who are listening to the podcast want to find you and they want to talk to you, they want to pick your brain, they want to grow their business, how do they find you? What's the best way to contact you?
Sure. So my company is called Farotech, F-A-R-O-T-E-C-H. You can hit us up at info@farotech.com or just check out our website. And then, you know, I'm on all the major social media channels from Facebook to LinkedIn to Twitter, Instagram. So, you know, please feel free to hit me up there. That'd be great.
Chris, I loved it. I got a lot out of it. I know our podcast listeners did as well. So thank you so much for joining us on our How We Scaled podcast. Listeners, thank you so much for listening and stay tuned for our next episode in coming in shortly. Chris, again, thanks for joining.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining. I truly hope everyone enjoyed the podcast here and our special guest. I know each of you are really excited to possibly even be a guest on our podcast. So feel free to fill out the application form that's below. We'll follow back up with you, be in touch with you, and it'd be great to have you. In addition, I know I'll be reaching out to you to see how we might be able to even do some business and have a conversation about working together. Again, thank you so much for joining our podcast. And if you do know of someone else that actually would like to be on the podcast, feel free to recommend him or her to also fill out the application below. Again, thank you so much for joining. Have a great day and see you next week on How We Scale.